Are either of you allergic to anything?
Housework?
Me too. Yeah, strange.
Hey, I'm Joel Werner. This is The Health Report. And today we're talking allergies with reporters Claudine Ryan and Tegan Osborne.
I'm allergic to bees, I think. I don't know anymore. So I was about 10 or 11 and I trod on a bee and I thought it was fine. I kept playing and I broke out in welts and my foot swelled up and then my neck swelled up and I had to carry an EpiPen for a few years, but then I kind of fell out of the habit and last year I got stung by a bee again, like 20 years later. I was living in the States and I was catching a plane to England that afternoon and I was like, I'll be fine. And so I got on the plane and had a glass of wine and went to sleep and woke up in London alive, but with a massively swollen hand, thankfully not a neck, but my hand was insane. It looked like someone had got a dishwashing glove and inflated it. But that's kind of what we're talking about today.
It is. And can I just jump in and say, go and get it sorted. I have a son with ant and tick anaphylaxis. And I hear you say that and I just think, God, Joel.
Claudine's son Parker's 15 years old and they've been dealing with his allergies for most of his life.
As a little kid, Parker used to dress up as Steve Irwin and catch crocs in our backyard. We lived in a house in the middle of the forest, so he scored more than his fair share of bites and stings. One afternoon, when he was about 3 and a half, he came inside screaming. He'd been stung by an ant yet again. But this time, he went red from head to toe and broke out in hives. He started coughing and wheezing a bit, and I knew this wasn't a good sign. What I didn't know was that this was anaphylaxis. We raced him to the doctor where they gave him a shot of adrenaline and sent us home with a script for an EpiPen. There haven't been many ant stings since. We put some simple strategies in place to ensure he stayed safe. And now the EpiPen goes wherever Parker goes. But my little croc hunter is growing up, and the thing is, he's now at greater risk of having a reaction, a bad reaction. Dr. Bryn Weinstein is a staff specialist at Sydney Children's Hospital and is working at the front line of the so-called allergy epidemic.
We know that the rates of anaphylaxis in Australia per year are increasing, which is in keeping with an increase in the rates of allergy in general that we're seeing and is also in keeping with rates that we are seeing overseas. But what we're seeing in Australia for some reason is that the rates of people dying from anaphylaxis is also increasing compared to the rest of the world where that's remaining stable. And we're not entirely sure why that is, but it's a very important phenomenon in terms of the way that we manage allergy and anaphylaxis here in Australia.
And just to clarify, in what age group are you seeing those increases? Is it in that adolescent age group?
The people at highest risk actually of dying from anaphylaxis are adults, and in particular older adults, but from different causes. Older adults are actually at increased risk of death from allergies to, say, medications. People in their teens and early 20s are most at risk when you're looking at deaths caused by food allergy or caused by allergy to insect venoms.
Over the last decade, the number of children diagnosed with life-threatening allergies has been increasing year on year. It's not always clear which of these children is at risk of the most severe form of allergic reaction, anaphylaxis.
Anaphylaxis is a term that we use to describe an allergic reaction which usually involves either the breathing or the respiratory system, or the heart and the blood pressure and the cardiovascular system. And it involves it in such a way that if the symptoms continued completely unchecked to their end point, then the reaction would be life-threatening or fatal in some cases. What's important to understand is that if you're allergic to food or to medications or to insect venom, etc., people are commonly referred to as being anaphylactic or non-anaphylactic. And that is a very big misnomer because anaphylaxis occurs on a spectrum with milder reactions. So people that have previously had mild reactions to foods, for example, are still at risk of anaphylaxis on another occasion. And vice versa, people that have a history of anaphylaxis may have subsequent milder reactions. It's not true that the reaction always gets worse. In fact, sometimes reactions can get better, if you like, to the point where people grow out of their allergies. The most important thing is to get a proper diagnosis so that you know exactly what you're dealing with. It's very important that everybody with an allergy, a suspected allergy, or somebody who's thought to be at risk of anaphylaxis is seen by a specialist at least once in their life.
Adolescence is a time of transition from childhood to adulthood, and the management of allergies is no exception.
A lot of the time, what happens is a child will have a reaction, they'll get diagnosed with a food allergy, and then years may pass where they're being monitored by their allergist, they're having allergy tests, so skin prick tests or blood tests, and that really is their only exposure to their allergy, which is a good thing because they're not having reactions, but it's thought that the allergy is persistent and that they haven't grown out of it. So sometimes 10 years or even longer go by with absolutely nothing happening. And of course, the person involved then doesn't remember the original reaction or any previous reaction. And it is easy for them to become complacent. In some instances where we have done food challenges in people in their teenage years, sometimes when reactions have occurred during those food challenges, it's actually a very useful thing for exactly that reason, that it then gives that person a more recent memory of what a food allergy feels like, what can happen, and what to do about the symptoms.
I have to admit, I worry about whether Parker really remembers what it's like. It's been 8 years since his last reaction.
I remember having hives. I don't remember the feeling of anaphylaxis.
What did the hives feel like?
It's just like sometimes when you've rubbed against like something, you just get like a rash and it's really itchy, but you don't want to scratch because it hurts. It burns. It's like that all over your whole body. It's really terrible.
So I decided to talk to someone who's 10 years ahead of Parker and find out how they navigated their way through adolescence. Alex Yang is in a similar position to Parker. He's 25 and he's had food allergies for as long as he can remember. He's allergic to peanuts, and when he was younger, he was also allergic to eggs. Like Parker and many young people with anaphylaxis, he didn't have any experience of symptoms throughout childhood. But, as is often the case, he did have a wake-up call as a young adult.
Pretty soon after I started working, I had a reaction at work, which was definitely a bit of a wake-up call. I was just, you know, at a meeting and there were like catered sandwiches and I was just like, oh, I've eaten the catered sandwiches from here before. I'm sure it'll be fine. And it wasn't fine.
Did you just feel bad or did that become something where you needed to use adrenaline or go to emergency or something like that? Or could you just tell that you were having a reaction?
Yeah, it wasn't a very strong reaction immediately. At first, it was just like some itchiness in my mouth. So I sort of wanted to ignore it. But yeah, ultimately, I started to feel quite sick and had to go to emergency. Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to get a sense of here is you went through adolescence not having known what it was like to really have a reaction, but that wasn't a problem.
It's easy to, it was very easy for me to be thinking, oh, this isn't a thing that really happens. You know, I hadn't had a reaction since I was like 4 or 5 or something. And just sort of wanting to believe that it wasn't something that could really happen.
What happens, of course, is that when the food allergy is diagnosed in a young child, their parents are very closely monitoring their behavior and their food intake and their socialization and looking after them. And if anything happens, their parents are onto it and management occurs very quickly and they get treated very quickly. All of those things change in adolescence because you're older and you're more independent. So you're spending more time away from mum and dad and you're making decisions about what foods to eat and what foods not to eat on your own. And of course, you don't want to be different to your peers. You don't want to appear different. You don't want to be isolated. And so many times adolescents will not appropriately check food labels or not inquire about ingredients of foods that they're unsure of because they don't want to be embarrassed.
Alex knows it's hard to ask questions like, are you sure this food doesn't contain any trace of peanuts?
It's a pretty, you know, kind of embarrassing thing to have to ask and also pretty impertinent thing to ask sometimes.
How did people respond when you asked them that question?
Definitely most of the time people are just mostly worried. so they don't really mind. But certainly you get some people who take it pretty personally or who want to disbelieve that your allergies are serious or whatever.
One of the defining features of adolescence is risk-taking. But when you have an allergy, the consequences can be life-threatening.
And that's, of course, not universal. And there are some adolescents that are really excellent at managing their food allergies and do everything correctly. And then there are some that don't. In that circumstance, that's extra risk-taking behaviour, if you like, which is common to all aspects of adolescence, becomes very important when you also have a food allergy.
I don't really remember taking any particularly stupid risks, but definitely it led to some cutting of corners.
What kind of corners did you cut? I promise I won't judge you.
Yeah, I guess it's just a matter of like when you're doing your due diligence or whatever, asking what's in it, you can be a lot more thorough. Sometimes people want to palm you off and stuff, and it's very easy to just let them palm you off. And then it's very easy to be like, oh, I've been here before many times or something, and then I'm not going to ask again, or I've been here 2 years ago and it's still got the same name, so I just won't ask again, and that sort of thing.
But it's not just that young people can be reckless when it comes to avoiding their allergy triggers. They're also not that great at getting help once they start to have a reaction.
Adolescents tend to be the people that have the most delayed treatment when it comes to anaphylaxis. And probably the reason for that is because they accidentally consume something that they shouldn't, that contains an allergen that they're allergic to. They start to have symptoms and they're embarrassed to tell anybody about it. They're embarrassed to tell their peers that they feel unwell or to tell a teacher if they happen to be at school or a counselor if they're on camp, for example. So they kind of go and sit quietly in the corner hoping that the symptoms will go away until it's too late, which is very different to what happens in younger kids that are being very supervised by their parents. And of course, as soon as they consume something and they feel unwell, they're not shy to tell you. And their parents tend to notice if they start to break out in hives. Whereas in adolescence, if nobody's looking at you, then those things might go unnoticed until it's too late. Because we know that early treatment in anaphylaxis is very important. So the longer you wait, the more the symptoms have progressed, the more difficult it is to reverse the episode.
Some of Weinstein's research has examined the cause of death from anaphylaxis in Australia over almost two decades.
There have been incidences of so-called sudden death associated with people standing up and or walking during an episode of anaphylaxis. And the reason that that happens is because during the episode, your blood pressure drops because the blood vessels, particularly in the lower limbs and the legs and your tummy and abdomen, sort of open up and all the blood pools in those areas. So as soon as you stand up, your heart doesn't fill properly and your blood pressure drops dangerously and you can die from that. So that's actually an incredibly important aspect, again, with adolescence. And it's important because of location. A lot of adolescents in high school will keep their adrenaline auto-injectors or EpiPens safely in their locker. They will eat in a different place. And often in high school, of course, there's lots of distance and there's lots of stairs up and down, etc. And so if anaphylaxis occurs in circumstances like that, then the first instinct, of course, is for the person involved to get up, walk to their locker and get their adrenaline auto-injector. The problem with that, of course, is that they have to stand up, they have to walk, and effectively they're exercising. So there are factors like that which can become really important in adolescence. These are the things that are different in high school compared to primary school, where the EpiPens are all kept in a central location and the children don't move around.
There are also physiological factors that can play a role, the most significant of which is asthma.
In adolescence, you're less likely to be compliant with all of your medications, including medications that are used to treat asthma, for example. And if you have poorly controlled asthma and then you have an episode of anaphylaxis, those two factors contribute significantly to the risk of death.
Teens with food allergies are more likely to have asthma. For these kids, symptoms of anaphylaxis are sometimes mistaken for asthma. And this means people are given a puffer instead of an EpiPen, and that won't stop anaphylaxis. Many of these worlds collide at school camp.
There you have similar factors at play to what we've discussed already, but they're probably amplified. They're in a strange environment. They're wanting to participate. They're very much wanting to not be different from their peers. If a reaction begins to occur, they may be even more reluctant to mention that. And of course, then there's the other factor that they're being supervised and cared for by people who are not their usual carers. Sometimes there can unfortunately be communication errors or problems that lead to the provision of foods that are not appropriate for everybody, or misinformation about what foods contain is another reason why there can sometimes be an increased risk in places like school camps.
It's pretty annoying when you're at school if your mum comes to every excursion you have, every camp.
Absolutely, because school camp is known as a time that can be high risk, and she used to go to school camp with you?
Yeah, we used to go like actual camping in the bush in some pretty weird areas. So yeah, that was the sort of thing that really worried her. So she did used to come to, I think, all of them, yeah.
But it wasn't just that Alex's mum went on all his school camps. He also had to endure the mortification of having his parents conduct EpiPen training sessions when his mates came over.
Often they would spring it on me. It wouldn't be a planned thing, for sure. It would just be, there happened to be like a few of my friends over, and they'd be like, oh, this is a great opportunity. And they would get out some oranges and some expired EpiPens, and we'd all practice on me with the trainer, and then they'd practice on the oranges. Which they found quite amusing, actually, to be honest. But I found, like, mortifying. So
you got yourself a support crew?
Yeah, my mates.
And so what did it look like?
I guess one of the main things is, like, at a barbecue, you're worried about what other people are going to be cooking on the barbecue or have cooked on the barbecue. And so if you have, like, a group of people who are like, we're going to cook the sausages first, and then they're going to go separately before we put the satay skewers on. And you can sort of control that process pretty tightly.
And so your mates like stepped up and did that for you, so you didn't have to do that all on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a source of concern for them as well.
So you think they were worried that they'd have to give you adrenaline, and that motivated them to make sure that you weren't?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that plays pretty heavy on a lot of people's mind, yeah.
Most adolescents are very well supported by their peers. I think that they seem to all have a select group of peers that they know that they can count on. And their parents will often have a quiet chuckle in the corner and refer to those people as their responsible friends.
My mates know. And I mean, one of them has diabetes, so they've got the idea of how to handle the stuff. They're like, okay, there's ads. We won't go there. Parker can't go there. They're not terrible. So yeah, they'll put an effort into avoiding the ants.
Do you think that they would know how to give you the EpiPen if it came to it?
They know how to get me the EpiPen, and I know how to give myself the EpiPen. But they probably would, actually.
But it's not enough to just rely on your mates. Alex has a hard and fast rule that helps keep him safe.
If I don't have my adrenaline with me, then I just don't eat anything. It's a fairly automatic thing anyway. I'm always aware when I'm eating, as a sort of like safety check, oh, where's my adrenaline? And if it's not there, then I just won't eat.
Alex describes his EpiPen as a security blanket.
Having it with me and being able to use it myself is like a pretty important form of control. You feel more secure knowing that you can personally deal with it yourself. You don't have to rely on your parents or your friend's parents or whoever's looking after you. That you can just deal with that yourself is like a big form of security, and I guess a big form of independence as well.
I think it's important as the person gets older to make sure that a lot of those responsibilities are removed actively from their parents, and you have open and active discussions about how that individual is going to take over those responsibilities when they're no longer with their parents all the time.
So what's your plan if you're up on the mountain with Reuben and you get bitten by a jumping ant? What would you do?
Well, I would move away from the nest, but I wouldn't move around too much because I know that's not right. And then I'd get myself with the EpiPen, call you guys, and just tell Reuben to stay with me.
And that's the thing about allergies. If they're managed well, there's no reason not to live a normal life.
The chances of dying from anaphylaxis are much lower than the chances of dying in a car accident on the way to the pharmacy to buy your adrenaline auto-injector. But that is probably to a large extent because it is well managed. If anaphylaxis is poorly managed, then the risk may certainly be higher. And of course, all deaths from anaphylaxis are entirely preventable.
Dr. Bryn Wainstein in that report from Claudine Ryan. You also heard from Claude's boy Parker and Alex Yang. This is the Health Report on RN. I'm Joel Werner.